Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope. Speaking of the quality and power of love, on this new day, fresh and clean and unused, moldable to your touch, reminds me strongly of an old fable. The sun and the wind agreed to hold a contest to determine which was stronger. One day when the wind was roaring and bragging about his strength, the sun challenged him in the fable. The sun said, "I see a way to decide our dispute. The one who can make that traveler take off his heavy cloak shall be the stronger." The wind agreed and said he'd try first. And the wind whirled and swirled about the traveler, almost whipping the coat to rags. But the harder the wind blew, the colder grew the atmosphere. The traveler wrapped his coat about him tighter than ever before. Finally, the wind gave up, admitted his failure, declared also the sun would fail. But the sun just smiled and let his rays fall gently on the traveler down below. Soon the traveler grew so warm, he had to remove his coat to keep cool. Now love is like the sun. Its very existence and expression creates warmth. It doesn't have to whip at a man and roar and rant to be effective. The simple awareness of love is effective. Did you ever watch clouds disperse on a dark day when the sun suddenly began to shine through? The clouds seemed to completely dissolve, melt away. You yourself have that same power within you to dispel all your troubles today, all your perplexities, all your distresses. Stop talking, stop thinking about your problems all the time. Such action aggravates your troubles. Brighten your mind with the conscious happiness of love. Take the advice of a wise philosopher. Do something for somebody else quickly when you're depressed. Do something for somebody else quickly when you're depressed. Such an action will brighten and change your entire outlook in a flash. One of the most interesting facets of love is the simple fact that only in the welfare of our fellow man can we attend properly to our own welfare. When we work for our neighbor, in reality, we are working for ourselves, and we are working with God, who needs us to carry out his will and to help him help others. When God's will has been fully carried out, we've reached the pinnacle of success, peace, even world peace. I'm often amazed at the complexities we humans assume must provide the victories we strive so hard, so clumsily to win. Somehow it seems only the poets have grasped the happy simplicity of real life satisfaction. The quality love, for example, is in its essence supremely simple. But poets, rather than the so-called great thinkers, are the ones who fully grasp the significance and the meaning of love. Consider the simplicity of these soaring lines. When your heart is in despair, add more love unto your prayer. Love will meet the need. When you find a rugged way, when you have a long, hard day, when for help you pray and pray, love will meet the need. When your heart is feeling fear, love will meet the need. Love will help in all you do. Love will help you to be true. Love will meet the need. God as love will banish hate, if on him you only wait. Love will meet the need. All your needs will be supplied, if on love you have relied. Not a thing will be denied. Love will meet the need. Or listen to these singing words, one of the most beautiful prayers that I know. Teach me to love. There was a time when in my daily prayer I asked for the things I deemed most fair and necessary to my life's success. Riches, of course, and ease and happiness. A host of friends, a home without alloy, a primrose path of luxury and joy, social distinction and enough of fame to leave behind a well-remembered name. Ambition ruled my life. I longed to do great things that all my little world might view and whisper, wonderful. Ah, patient God, how blind we are until thy shepherd's rod of tendering chastening gently leads us on to better things. Today, I have but one petition, Lord. Teach me to love. Indeed, it is my greatest, my only need. Teach me to love, not those who first love me, but all the world, with that rare purity, a broad, outreaching thought, which bears no trace of earthly taint, but holds in its embrace humanity, and only seems to see the good in all reflected, Lord, from thee. And teach me, Father, how to love most, those who most stand in need of love, that host of people who are sick and poor and bad, whose tired faces show their lives are sad, who toil along the road with footsteps slow, and hearts more heavy than the world can know. People, when others pass discreetly by, they fail to hear the pleading of their cry, for help amid the tumult of the crowd, whose very anguish makes them cold and proud, resentful, stubborn, bitter in their grief. I want to bring them comfort and relief, to put my hand in theirs, and at their side walk softly on, a faithful, fearless guide. Help me to feel these sad ones doubly dear, because they need so much. Help me to seek and find that which they thought was lost, to speak such words of cheer that, as we pass along, the wilderness shall blossom into song. Ah, love divine, how empty was that prayer of other days, that which once was so fair, those flimsy baubles that the world calls joys, are nothing to me now but broken toys, outlived, outgrown. I thank thee that I know those much-desired dreams of long ago, like butterflies, have had their summer's day, of brief enchantment have gone. I pray for better things. Thou knowest, God above, my one desire now. Teach me to love. What could be simpler than the thoughts in these lines? A child can understand them. Yet so many of us neglect or somehow are unable to make use of their protection against happiness, unhappiness, sorrow, suffering, fear, envy, worry. We permit ourselves to be tangled in imagined complexities and thus lose sight of love's utter simplicity. Every human being needs and ardently wishes to love and to be loved. But say the many who get lost on the way, the people I know don't seem to want or need my love or appreciation or understanding. Some of them almost make a point of telling me they don't even want my friendship. Don't you believe it? Do the flowers need sunshine and rain? Of course. The people around you want and need your goodwill and affection just as much as the flowers need sunshine and rain. Maybe they've been fooling you. They may even have fooled themselves into the belief they can get along without your love or anybody else's love. Fear, a sense of insecurity, or lack of understanding can often make human beings act and on the surface even feel exactly opposite to their basic desires. But every person in the world wants love, whether consciously or unconsciously. Your own heart, with understanding and love, can cut through the negative, untruthful, and unconscious outer layer of somebody else's fear and timidity and misunderstanding. Reach in. Meet a fellow human being's deep, true wish for love and need and understanding and thirst for appreciation. We all want appreciation so very much. If you try sincerely to fill this need for love and understanding and appreciation, others will be forced out of their shells, no matter how thick or hard, into the warmth of human love. The underlying unity and harmony of life demands that we extend to others all the goodwill and kindness and generosity and love we hope to receive from them. To have a friendly attitude toward others is indispensable to our own successful living. Emerson's well-known phrase, "The only way to have a friend is to be one," was much more than virtuous sentiment. Love felt sincerely in your heart for all mankind will keep you stable and calm, serene, poised in whatever circumstances you may find yourself. Love can heal your discord of mind, your body, or the day-to-day affairs of the world you live in. Envelop yourself in it. Immerse yourself so fully and so deeply that love radiates to all about you and reflects back to yourself. Remember these words. You cannot be critical and radiate love. You cannot be selfish and radiate love. You cannot be angry and radiate love. Try another experiment. Consider for a moment some individual from whom you feel no sentiment of love or affection. Then try to think how you would react if you should learn this person felt only love for you. The result of this little exercise alone may surprise you. Through the love you express, you can accomplish anything you desire, eliminate anything or any condition that might otherwise work against you. So, in one way or another, to define love is an admonition. Be the friend you want. Be courteous, be gentle, be kind. Above all, be understanding of yourself, of your own shortcomings, as well as those of others. If a friend understands you, it's obvious this understanding brings out the best within you. Remember, this works both ways. If you understand a friend, you bring out the best within his makeup. You may even help the friend find within himself forces and powers and love of which he's unaware. There's a poem called Friendship, written by Francis J. Gable, that always comes to my mind when I think about human beings trying to make friends. Says Gable, "I want the man I meet each day, wherever I may be, to know that joy and happiness just radiate from me. I want to put so much into the hand clasp I extend that every man I meet will say, I know he'll be a friend. I want to greet my fellow man with such a hearty smile that will banish all their care and make life seem worthwhile. I want to understand their need and such assistance lend that every man I know will feel I'm glad he's my friend. I ask not honor nor reward for anything I do. I just would open wide my heart and let the love shine through. Though I but meet a brother once, one touch, one smile I'd send and cause that man to sing for I'm glad he's my friend." And so, friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here. But the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission to produce new products for every corner of the globe that could forever change the way we think of made in China. Step behind the closed doors of modern China into a factory the size of a city. Welcome to the place that calls itself Factory of the World. By the time you finish watching this program, Yupa's 17,000 Chinese workers will produce nearly 20,000 electrical appliances. Every day they churn out 60,000 irons. Every month, Yupa makes 36,000 coffee makers. That's two new machines for every Starbucks on the planet. And every year, these laborers produce a staggering 18 million electric grills. Stacked side by side, they span the Atlantic from New York to London. chances are you own something built right here. Factories like these don't exist in North America or Europe, but they're not uncommon in China, where labor is cheap. Yupa runs on human sweat alone. No need for robots. To ensure non-stop production, workers need a steady stream of parts. Someone has to make sure those parts get to the right place in time. This is Ming Long Pa. He started work at Yupa in 1994.
I'm in charge of production control. Production control is the brain of the factory. Its main function is to coordinate each department.
If any of Yupa's factories run out of parts, Mr. He's job is on the line.
The production line cannot wait. We have to guarantee that our production is smooth. Running out of materials would affect our efficiency, affect our productivity, and affect our revenue. So I have to fix this in the shortest time possible.
Today, a problem at the iron factory needs smoothing out. Workers on the iron line are low on a crucial part. To keep up production, they need 2,000 units, and they need them now.
Just now I found out the main problems here at the iron department. One major problem is the case for model 603. They need 2,000 right now.
Traditional plants use outside suppliers for their components, not Yupa. To slash costs and stay competitive, Yupa builds its own parts on site. So Mr. He's supplier is only a bike ride away. But even the supplier is dangerously low on stock. Mr. He has found barely enough parts to last the day. When he gets another urgent call. Now the grill factory is low on a crucial component. Grills are the company's most profitable products. Yupa started producing one line of grills in 1994. Now, 60 assembly lines churn out 800 different models. Workers make one grill every 12 seconds. That's 50,000 grills per day, or 1.5 million per month. Enough grills for every person in Dallas. Grills bring in $350 million a year, but Yupa wants more. Little wonder Lu Jinye acts like a general leading his troops to war. By next year, managers expect workers to crank out $500 million worth of grills. Yupa's profits have to rise to outmuscle the competition. Mr. Ye supervises 850 workers on 30 lines.
We have to coordinate all these workers and pull all their thoughts into one. It takes teamwork to accomplish our goals, to get the results we want.
Mr. Ye is obsessed with quality control. His aim? Boost output without compromising quality. In a factory this big, with a production run so massive, even the hyper-efficient Mr. Ye hits a roadblock.
This holder piece holds the grill plate. What we're seeing now is the assembly of this piece. The problem is the size. It's the wrong size.
They've run out of part number 2627. It attaches the core heating element to the frame. Without this simple component, assembly lines will shut down unless Mr. Ha finds a fresh supply, and soon.
If we don't get them the parts, 6 production lines will have to stop.
When every part is on hand, grills assemble like a simple puzzle. Wires are linked to the heating element, and the element is fixed to the plate.
When it's not locked down properly, it will fall off. If it falls off, it will burn the hands of our customers and consumers. This job is very important.
Then it's time to connect the power cord.
The brown wire is live and the green wire is neutral. The one with the writing on it matches the brown wire. Connect them and that makes the wire live.
Each grill is inspected for flaws in construction or appearance. Finally, every grill is tested to make sure everything is in working order. On a typical day, Mr. Ye's team must make 700 of Yupa's 50,000 grills. Missing parts cause delays, cost Yupa a fortune, and force workers into overtime to meet their quota. Finding the missing parts falls to Mr. Ha, and the pressure is on. Mr. He finally arrives, and he has good news. He's found 2,000 parts to keep the lines moving, and 50,000 more are on the way. Mr. He's day has ended on a high note. He heads home to a company-subsidized apartment only minutes away. His wife, Hong Zhang-yu, also works for the plant. Together, they lead a life of relative luxury. Family life in China is a communal affair. His parents and his in-laws live here, thanks to Yupa. It's one more reason workers are fiercely loyal to their company.
Our products all have the Made in China tag. I hope our products can bring to consumers a sense of joy, a sense of it's worth it. This is my biggest wish.
Fulfilling that wish will come at a cost.
When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Yupa's next generation of workers must leave their families behind and devote their lives to the company. It's a place tourists never see. The new face of modern China. Competitive, hungry for profits, and ready to take on the world. Located near the city of Xiaomen, the Yupa complex sprawls for 1.8 square kilometers, almost the size of Monaco.
We have about over 20 buildings here. You know, the largest building, you know, equal like 4 football fields. You can have 60 to 70 assembly line. Each assembly line can have 25 to 35 workers in the line.
25 years ago, there were no factories here, only farms. In the 1980s, the Chinese government decided capitalism wasn't so bad after all. The communist regime established so-called special economic zones, designated places for free markets and foreign investments. Yupa, a Taiwanese company, moved here in 1988. In a few short years, it became the largest manufacturer of irons, electric grills, and espresso makers in the world. Yupa is a city unto itself, with restaurants and convenience stores, soccer fields and basketball courts, and living quarters for everyone from students to families. Success made it big, and size keeps it successful. Mass production runs push down costs.
All right. Today's podcast is titled DIY is My Religion and Daily Build Streak. Let me explain it. DIY, of course, stands for do it yourself. I'm big on do it yourself. I often play this audio that I just, well, it wasn't even midstream yet, but Factory City, which you can watch it on Amazon for free. No. You can watch it on YouTube for free, or you can buy your own copy. That's what I did. Although I can watch it on YouTube for free, but okay, well, oftentimes, a lot of good stuff that you see on YouTube for free doesn't stay on there free for a long time. Some stay on there for a long time, some don't. So I went over to Amazon and bought a copy, a digital copy of Factory City. It's a really good video. Now, I've got a documentary, that is. I have a friend, and did I take notes? We had a conversation a week or two ago. She works in a factory in Southeast Asia, and they make baseball mitts. And let me see if I can find some notes on that. I was just fascinated by let me see what the conversation I had with her, because we did a chat. And it started off as a normal friend-to-friend chat. Okay, yeah, I found it. I didn't take notes, but I kept the chat. So they make baseball mitts. So on her team, and it mirrors the Factory City documentary, they have like 39 people on their particular team to make a baseball mitt. Now, she did, on when I spoke to her, she did 100 mitts in a day. And her, like I said, she's on a team of 39 people. So, the way they break down a baseball mitt, because they make them from scratch. But and they have several teams. I'm trying to find out how many teams they have there. But she says typically it might take 3 hours to make one baseball mitt. And like I said, they got a team of 39. It depends on what aspect of the work that they had to do on the mitt on the team of 39. But, I was just blown away. 39 people to make one baseball mitt, but that's what she does. She's part of that team. Now, with Toyota manufactures or assembles, rather, let's see, 29.9 cars per minute. 29.9 cars per minute. Very impressed by that number as well. So, matter of fact, I have audio on that. I'm going to play here quickly or shortly. But it's amazing what you can do. And as a matter of fact, the typical, let's say on average, whether Toyota is manufacturing a car, truck, on average might have 30,000 parts. So they have an assembly system where that's mind-boggling. And even more fascinating, these companies typically started with just one person. who had no, they had to learn the business of making a car, making a motorcycle, making a truck. So anyway, here's Toyota, but we want to apply that to what we do. I mean, because it, you know, how many parts is there to a tiny house? You know, or a shed. And then how can you assemble it in, you know, a short amount of time? So if Toyota can, produce 29-point cars per minute, and on average there are 30,000 parts to a car, then, I mean, because a tiny house doesn't have nowhere near that many parts, not even 1,000 parts to a tiny house. So how quick can a team of people, and how big would that team have to be?
As the world's finest horses gallop and play in nearby bluegrass pastures, Kentuckians are harnessing a different kind of horsepower. At Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky, Kentuckians are combining the time-tested principles of one of the world's leading automakers with hands-on skill and dedication to build a high standard for quality in American-made vehicles. Each day, Toyota's Kentucky team members put into action the Toyota Production System, known across the world for its quality, safety, and efficiency. TMMK covers about 7.5 million square feet of space, with the equivalent of about 156 football fields under roof. This is one of the most complete vehicle manufacturing plants in the world. TMMK's production process starts in die manufacturing by using everything from computer-controlled laser technology to hand grinding tools. These team members bring the designer's plans to life with quality measured within 0.02 millimeter. Once complete, the dies come to stamping, a shop that covers about 700,000 square feet. The dies will be loaded into one of more than 30 presses in the shop to do their jobs. It takes about 20 hours to complete one of our vehicles. Once stamping begins to make the nearly 300 sheet metal parts needed for each vehicle. Stamping's work begins with these giant coils of steel weighing up to 24 tons. Team members on the floor move the coils using a remote control overhead crane. The coil is loaded into one of our four blanking machines, which straighten and clean the metal. Then the machines cut the metal into blanks. The blanking machines cut the steel at a rate of 80 strokes per minute, using a force of nearly 800 tons. The finished blanks are fed into stackers that automatically stop at the beginning and end of each production process for a quality check. This is one of the many times we will check the quality of our vehicles during the production process. Every team member at TMMK is an inspector. While doing their jobs, they inspect the product to make sure that no defects are passed on to their customer. At Toyota, the customer is not only the person who buys the finished vehicle, but also the next team member in the production process. When blanks pass inspection, they're moved to storage by a forklift operator. They stay there until they're needed on the stamping lines. Then the driver will deliver the blanks to the press. In stamping, TMMK uses more than 20 automated press lines and more than 30 presses, loaded with some 900 dies. Weighing as much as 40 tons each, these dies come together with up to 2,600 tons of pressure to bend, shape, and trim the blanks into formed vehicle parts. To withstand an impact so strong, the floor beneath the presses is nearly 3 feet of solid concrete. The larger presses also rest on several concrete pillars that go as deep as 30 feet below the shop floor. In this basement, metal scraps trimmed from the parts during stamping fall onto a conveyor and are collected for recycling. Throughout our plant, we recycle and reuse as much material as possible in order to be a good steward of the environment. When a different part is needed, dye changes are required. For many plants, this is a time-consuming process, but at Team MK, we have the process down to about 10 minutes. At the end of our stamping lines, team members inspect the parts as they come off the presses. Once approved, the parts are stored for a short time until they're needed by our body weld department. In about 2 hours, body weld builds a complete body shell. This shop covers about 1 million square feet and is the most automated part of our plant. Its team members work with some 700 robots. Body weld is divided into four lines: underbody respot, underbody tacking, main framing body, and body shell. Here in the underbody respot line, three major sections of the underbody come together: the engine compartment, the front floor, and the rear floor. Then the underbody will move to the main framing body line, where it will join to the quarter panels, the roof, the cowl, and the upper back of the vehicle. Alongside team members, more than 70 computer-controlled robots perform the thousands of precision welds required on this line. Next, the vehicle bodies are lifted onto the overhead conveyor and taken to the body shell line, the last line in body weld. On the body shell line, team members attach various parts, including trunk lids, doors, hoods, and fenders. After final inspection and approval, completed body shells travel by conveyor to our paint shop, or they may head to shipping. If they are among the more than 350 replacement parts that our stamping and body weld shops supply to dealers and other customers around the world, these shops produce repair parts for our vehicles for at least 10 years after Team MK stops production of a model. Here in paint, a body shell gets what will be one of the vehicle's most defining qualities, its color. And we guard the quality of that paint job very closely. Throughout paint, care is taken to keep debris out, because even one speck of dust can ruin a paint finish. As team members enter the shop, they don special lint-free clothing and walk through an air blow room. The air removes any loose hair, thread, or material that may diminish the quality of our paint jobs. These team members working in paint also must be mindful of how personal products might affect the paint process. Our paint process takes about 10 and a half hours to complete, starting when a completed body shell is pulled from body weld. The pull system is an aspect of the Toyota Production System's just-in-time concept. When material or a component, like a body shell, is needed, it's pulled to the shop, not pushed, as in many traditional manufacturing facilities. By pulling instead of pushing, we produce only what we need, when we need it, and in the amount needed. Painting at Toyota involves 8 basic processes, but first the body shell must be cleaned. A series of dips into tanks removes dirt, grease, and other contaminants from the surface. Then the painting begins with a dip into the phosphate tank, a process that etches the body shell so primer and top coat will better adhere to it. Next is the ED dip. Electrodeposition is an electronically charged primer that permanently bonds to the shell. After ED, the body goes through a series of rinses, then is oven baked at nearly 500 degrees. Next, in dry sand and sealing, team members smooth rough spots on the body surface. Then robots apply a seam sealer to prevent corrosion and water leaks. The fourth process in paint is anti-chip. Here, a coating is applied to the bottom of our vehicles where they will receive the most road damage. In the next process, primer is applied to smooth out the appearance of previous layers. Then the body shell is baked again, this time at more than 250 degrees. The sixth process in paint is wet sand. Here the shell will get its final preparation before painting, with team members inspecting it and removing any last imperfections. Next, the vehicle gets its top coat in one of 3 paint booths. This area is another example of Toyota's commitment to the environment. Our paint robots use a unique cartridge and water-based system that lets them quickly switch between paint colors with little waste of paint or the use of harsh chemicals. The robots also are programmed to paint along the contour of the vehicle. This reduces the amount of overspray that enters our reclamation system. Next, the painted shell is baked again, this time at around 250 degrees for about a half an hour. Then the painted body is checked for any imperfections at the eighth and final process, final inspection. There, approved vehicles go to the selectivity bank, ready to be pulled to assembly when needed. While the body shell is being welded and painted, our powertrain shop is building the vehicle's engine. TMMK produces more than 2,000 engines a day on site. We build both 4- and 6-cylinder engines in this 1.2 million square foot shop. Powertrain's raw materials include engine blocks and heads that come from our suppliers. TMMK has more than 350 suppliers in North America, over 100 of which are located in Kentucky. Powertrain machines its camshafts, crankshafts, connecting rods, cylinder blocks, cylinder heads, cam housing, and piston pins from our supplier's rough castings. The machine components are sent to short block subassembly first. Here, team members install the crankshaft, pistons, and piston pin assemblies. After the engine receives a balance shaft for vibration reduction, it moves to lower assembly, the second assembly process. Next, a team member positions the oil pan just before a machine inserts and tightens the oil pan bolts. If the machine detects any problems, it will stop and send a signal to alert the team leader. This is another key part of the Toyota production system. Jidoka is our practice of stopping production whenever a problem is detected. Many of our machines will automatically do this, and our team members can do this as well to keep any flaws out of our products. Next, a team member installs the timing belt, timing cover, and oil and water pumps. As the engine moves down its line, team members confirm their work and that of previous processes. In the final production stage, the engine gets its cylinder head, wire harness, intake, and exhaust systems. Once completed, the quality of our engines is confirmed in a test cell. Here, the engines are subjected to several tests as team members evaluate them for noise, emissions, and any abnormalities. Approved engines are sent to a shipping room, which holds a 2 to 3 hour supply of engines. Team members of our conveyance team will come to collect the engines that are needed when they are needed by assembly. They'll be delivered just in time. Our assembly plants also get parts from our on-site plastic shop. In this 517,000 square foot shop, team members produce components for our vehicles, including interior trim, rocker panels, manifolds, front and rear bumpers, and instrument panels. Making the instrument panel, or IP, starts in the injection molding area, where plastic pellets are melted and then injected into a mold under several hundred tons of pressure at more than 400 degrees to form the instrument panel's skeleton, which we call a substrate. Nearby, in the slush molding area, molds are filled with a very fine powder and are heated and cooled over several processes to create the skin of the instrument panel. In plastics, IP assembly team members combine the skin and substrate and add padding made of recycled materials, as well as other parts from within the shop and from vendors. Also in the shop's injection molding area, team members make trim for the vehicle's interior and produce the manifold. They injection mold each piece, then combine them using an ultrasonic welder. Robots load the parts into the machine, which uses high-frequency sounds to weld them together. Then the manifolds pass to the manifold assembly line, where they are fitted with gaskets and parts to ready them for vehicle installation. This shop also makes vehicle bumpers. after they are formed by injection molding. The raw bumpers are primed and painted in plastics in much the same way as the vehicle body is painted in our paint department. Rocker panels are also created and painted in this shop using the same process. While plastic supplies assembly with these two parts, the shop also ships them to our sister Camry plant in Indiana and to dealers as service parts. TMMK Plastics ships about 1,000 service parts each day. We supply service parts for up to 21 years after the production stops for a model. The machines and plastics are kept running by the shop's maintenance team members, while another set of skilled tool and die team members repair molds and dies. At the end of each plastics process, team members inspect their parts for quality and then load them onto a parts carrier for delivery to the next process, including assembly. TMMK's assembly shops are the largest in the plant, covering nearly 2 million square feet. Assembly 1, our original plant, builds Avalon and Camry, while Assembly 2 produces Camry and Venza. Each shop is comprised of three operations or lines: trim, chassis, and final. Assembly's work begins when it pulls a newly painted body shell from paint onto the trim line. Trim installs parts largely unseen by customers, like wiring harnesses, onboard computers, and padding that will keep the vehicle's interior quiet. At the beginning of this line, a team member places a manifest sheet on each vehicle. This sheet tells team members which parts and which options to install on each vehicle coming down the line. Here the car also gets its set of keys. They will travel the length of the line with the vehicle. As parts for each vehicle are needed, they are delivered lineside by our conveyance team members. Parts arrive from our suppliers constantly throughout the day, orchestrated by our production control department. Using our just-in-time system to minimize inventories and floor space, the plant typically stocks on-site only the parts needed for about 3 hours of production. As parts arrive, some go directly to the line, like seats, which are already in perfect order to match the vehicle in which they're going to be installed. Most parts, however, are brought here to our dock area, where team members sort and prepare them for the line. They'll box some parts for a particular vehicle together into what we call kitting. Kitting involves parts that are small or difficult to differentiate between models. That kit will be delivered to the assembly line and often travels with the vehicle once it's picked. Kitting lets team members focus on a quality installation. As the vehicle works its way down our assembly trim line, it gets one of its most important features, its VIN, or Vehicle Identification Number. This machine is striking a series of numbers and letters onto a metal plate. This VIN is installed at the base of each windshield to permanently identify the vehicle. Here, a team member installs the side curtain airbag, one of the first of up to 10 airbags that will be installed depending on the vehicle model. One of the first Japanese words and concepts that our team members learn at Toyota is Kaizen. It means continuous improvement and is a hallmark of the Toyota production system. Every team member contributes to Kaizen. Here is a great example of Kaizen. When TMMK began production in 1988, the doors stayed on the vehicles throughout the assembly process. Several years later, following a team member's suggestion, we implemented a Kaizen and removed the doors. Now, team members don't waste motion and time walking around the doors or constantly opening and closing them, nor do they chance being hurt by walking into the doors. The Kaizen also reduces the possibility that the doors themselves will be damaged. And it lets us move parts racks closer to the line, again reducing the team member's motion and time. This Kaizen, developed by a team member, helped improve safety, ergonomics, quality, and productivity all in one. Once taken off the vehicle, the doors travel by overhead conveyor to a trim subassembly line called the door line. Here, windows, padding, locks, speakers, and other components and options are installed. With the doors now at eye level, team members can complete their work easier and safer. The doors then head into an overhead conveyor system until it's time to reinstall them to the vehicle on the final line. Meanwhile, the doorless vehicle continues its assembly process on the trim line, where the hood insulation is installed. This padding helps keep engine noise in the passenger compartment and outside of the vehicle to an absolute minimum. TMMK builds hybrid versions of many of its models, and here the main hybrid battery is installed. Weighing more than 50 pounds, the battery is placed in the vehicle's trunk with the help of an assistant. Devices like this are used throughout our plant to help keep our team members safe and injury-free. Trim also installs the headliner, moonroof trim, and visors. Hanging just above the line, near our team members, is an andon cord. Our team members have a certain set amount of time to do their jobs. We call this tack time. If they have a concern or encounter a problem that keeps them from meeting that tack time, they can pull the andon cord and call for help. Pulling the andon cord activates tunes, lights, and boards that tell team and group leaders that they're needed and where. They'll respond and try to address the concern without stopping the line. But if they can't do that within the tech time, they will pull the cord again and all of production stops. Or, if need be, they'll take the vehicle offline to make any needed repairs. Next, in trim, the vehicle gets the instrument panel that was made for it in plastics. When the IP left plastics, it came to the IP line, another sub-assembly line here in trim. Here, team members install, among other components, air conditioning ductwork, controls, gauges to monitor speed and fuel, stereo options, and the steering column. Once the IP is complete, an automatic guided vehicle, or AGV, delivers it line side for installation into the vehicle. These smart carts are made by team members and follow a magnetic strip in the floor to their destination. Team members use a hoist to install the IP into the vehicle. Team members also use a hoist to install the rear struts, which can weigh about 70 pounds each. These devices greatly reduce the ergonomic burden on our team members and help ensure a quality installation. Trim also installs the vehicle's axles, parts which are built on-site by our powertrain shop. Next comes the gear shift and the rear tail lights. Team members on this line also place the Toyota and model emblems carefully onto the vehicle. With trim's work complete, the vehicle moves to chassis, a line that is elevated because its work is underneath the vehicle. Chassis team members install fuel lines, brake lines, and the engine built just for this vehicle in our powertrain shop. Powertrain supplies the engine block to the engine line in assembly. This sub-assembly area will build up the engine block with the air compressor, alternator, and the vehicle's transmission, along with other components. A lifter holding the engine sub-assembly then moves under the vehicle where it's hydraulically raised into the engine compartment. Team members bolt the engine to the H-frame and body and then attach the axles. The exhaust and muffler assemblies are installed afterwards. Also in chassis, the vehicle gets a radiator, rear speakers, seat belts, and carpet. Here, a quality control team member inspects the work of chassis, helping to ensure that only the best work is shipped on. The wheels and lug nuts are installed by this machine, a nut runner. It's used to ensure that all the lug nuts are tightened to the exact torque needed. The nut runner features a poke yoke. A poke yoke is a fail-safe device that detects defects and prevents them from being processed any further. Poke yokes are used in conjunction with many pieces of our equipment, especially critical processes to ensure safety and quality. At the end of chassis, the vehicle moves to the overhead conveyor, where a robot places the spare tire into the trunk. Then the vehicle descends to the final line, where robots also help team members install the traditional battery. One robot places batteries onto a conveyor, while the next installs the battery into the engine compartment. Robots also help final line team members install the vehicle's windshield and rear window glass. This final line team member is installing the center console with the help of a floating chair called a raku seat. Another example of our just-in-time manufacturing is our seat installation. When the vehicle bodies leave our paint shop, information is sent to our seat supplier, also located in Georgetown. They build the seats and ship them in sequence to match the order of vehicles on our assembly line. An overhead conveyor brings the seats directly from the delivery truck to final for installation. Then the doors are reunited with their original vehicle. Final also installs the coolant, windshield wiper fluid, steering wheel, windshield wipers, headlights, and the bumpers. The vehicle gets its first gasoline on final line. It enters this concrete block room where a few gallons of gasoline are pumped into the tank. Under these bright lights, team members inspect every inch of the body surface and interior closely to make sure that it meets Toyota's high standards of quality. At the end of this line, a quality control team member drives the vehicle off the line and across rumble strips. These create vibrations, which will expose any rattles or unacceptable noises. The team member positions the vehicle on the tow adjust to adjust the steering wheel, as another team member in the pit below aligns the vehicle. Team members then test the vehicle's functionality on a roll drum. As the vehicles move from zero to about 80 miles an hour, team members check for proper gear shifting. Next, each vehicle travels through a water shower to check for any leaks. In one of the last assembly processes, the driver's steering wheel airbag is installed. With this installation, the vehicle's airbag system is initialized. Randomly selected vehicles from our daily production are taken over to our audit lab and test track. In the lab, team members run quality assurance tests to check for everything from water leaks to audio system functionality. At the test track,